Before we dive into the episode, make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening on. Also, follow me on X at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe on YouTube by looking up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty. You can also buy one of my shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser, set it off.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
Where are all the gutless American wrestlers? Step in the ring with the Baron and face the brains.
The reason why Axe and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan, that is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine is in government issue.
Hello, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining us again this week. On this episode, my guest is Krisita Korchinko. We talk about getting started, the UWF, Bill Watts, reality TV, plus much more. It's a very, very fun interview. Again, I think it's another guest that a lot of people don't have, right? And that's what I try to do, right? I try to bring you some guests that aren't on all the podcasts out there. And then, I feel that I do a pretty good job with that, and you guys seem to be enjoying it. Now, before we dive into that, I just want to say thank you to everyone for all of your birthday wishes this past Monday. It was indeed my birthday, and I always get a lot of love on social media, and I do greatly appreciate it. It's hard sometimes to always respond or even hit a like on all of them, because sometimes there's just so many. So if I did miss you, I didn't give you a thumbs up, a like, or a response or anything, don't take it personally. It's just, being overwhelmed with all the love and not being able to hit everybody. So just a blanket thank you to everybody for your birthday greetings and love and wishes and everything else that you gave me this past Monday. It really helped to make my day. All right. Now let's take a break. When we come back, we will have that interview with Korchinko. So stick around.
Hey guys, Ray Russell here, curator of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, inviting you guys to listen to many of the programs here as part of the WrestleCopia brand, including, but not limited to, the Wrestling Memory Grenade, currently covering the 1988 and the WWF Project. You can also listen to the Regional Wrestling Podcast, where we talk the territories, whether it's Jamie Ward with Georgia 81, Roman Gomez with the UWF in 1986, or Gene Jackson covering Memphis in 85. Three projects going on right now over there at Regional Wrestling. You can also listen to The Wrestling Stoop with the legend himself, Bob Roop. Bob goes back in time each and every week, covering not just his career, but countless stories and interactions with hundreds of wrestling names spanning his two decades in the business. But that's not all. You can also check out the Puro Wrestling Academy with the professor of Puro Resu, Mr. Dan Ginnity. Dan and I go back in time and cover the history of Japanese professional wrestling in the English language. And you can listen to all of those shows and more, all part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, located over at WrestleCopia.com. That's WrestleCopia.com, and anywhere your podcast streaming needs are met, from Apple to Spotify, Pocket Cast, and beyond. And while you're at it, why not subscribe to our social media guys for all the latest goings on here at the WrestleCopia Podcast Network? Plus, I'm constantly adding old school video clips and pictures from throughout wrestling history. You can follow us over on X, formerly Twitter, at Wrestling Grenade. That's at R-A-S-S-L-I-N Grenade. Also, follow and like me, Facebook.com/Wrestling Grenade. And why not subscribe to YouTube.com/Wrestling Grenade? So if you're looking to support that next up-and-coming podcast brand, please consider making it WrestleCopia.
Yeah, This is Listen to Their Screams, a horror podcast that feels like you're chatting with friends. Hello, I am one of your friends, Dave. I am one of the co-hosts of Listen to Their Screams with my friend Ike, and we want you to come and check us out. We are a fun-filled, positive horror movie podcast that does reviews, news, birthdays, anniversaries. We play games. We are a ton of fun every week for you, the horror fan out there. For all of our links to our social media and the podcast platforms, just check out our link tree. It is linktr.ee/listen2screams. That is listen, the number two, and screams. Or look us up on your favorite social media platform and podcast provider. And welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. At this time, I'm being joined by Corsita Korchenko. Corsita, how are you?
Man, I'm doing fine. Thanks for having me on your show.
You're welcome. I read you were trained in Florida, correct? By the great Malenko, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. The great Malenko and Carl von Stroheim, and with a little bit of interdiction from Carl Gotch every now and then. Yeah. But yeah, Malenko was the man.
That's some pretty legit trainers right there.
Oh, you bet, man. You bet. The greatest, the best. I love them.
So at what point did you adopt the Korchenko Russian gimmick?
Well, I went in, for the first year I wrestled around with Malenko, and I really couldn't find my identity. Yeah. You know, so I was, jumping around different things. But when I broke into the business in the office, I used the name Smirnoff because I wanted a Russian gimmick. And, but the Korchenko thing didn't come about until I went to Georgia Championship Wrestling, okay. And it was Ole Anderson that gave me the name. He called it Kostya Korchenko, and I said, Kostya, what do you mean Kostya? He said, Kostya money, Kostya Korchenko. I said, okay, So over time, I kind of refined it because I didn't really like Kostya.
Yeah.
So I kind of refined it to where it came out to be Korsita, but that's how it came about.
Yeah, and I assume, obviously, at that time, there's the Cold War's going on, the Red Scare and all that. I mean, Russian characters were a huge, villainous thing, and you're a big guy, so it worked, right?
Oh, it worked great. We were bitter enemies of Russia during that time, and I had a tremendous amount of heat with that Russian flag.
Yeah.
And, Eddie Gilbert come up with the idea to carry around that little red shovel so I could bury the Americans with it. And that just, infuriated people. So, it worked.
When you look online, try to find information on you, it's all over the place. And we're going to try to track through your career the best we can. All right. You trained in Florida, right? And you wrestled in Florida with the Malenkos.
Yeah.
Where did you go after that? Because I have you early on that you were at some point in Southeastern. Did that come after Florida?
Yeah. Thereabouts? Yeah. The wrestling I did in Florida was with Malenko. He was running the Outlaw show to the office there, So, he ran a school. He trained up some guys. And then he'd go run some shows all over Florida. And so that's what I did. That's how I got my experience for the first year.
Mm-hmm.
So everything after that, Southeastern and because I got my break actually for Bill Watts in Mid-South first in 1982, I think it was.
Yeah.
82.
Yeah, you were using the name Smirnoff at that time, right? That first time in Mid-South.
Smirnoff. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So you've been all over the place though. I mean, you were in Southeastern for the followers. You worked in Kansas City at some point, right? Let's talk just briefly about Kansas City, because Kansas City has a reputation for being a rough territory, right? Kind of the crowds are not the greatest. It's just not the greatest place to work. Did you have that experience when you were in Kansas City?
Oh, yeah, man. Oh, yeah. It was rowdy, especially at Municipal Hall, Kansas City, Kansas. And, we had the great crowds, Topeka, Kansas City, just on and on. That whole place, man, was rock and roll. And I love that territory. Yeah. I was there back in 83. So still a heck of a lot of good talent crossed through there while I was there, too,
Yeah.
And like the Barbarian, the Warlord, they were there, you know.
Yeah.
Rick Link, you know, he was there.
Yep.
So, yeah, a lot of great talent. I love that territory. Bob Geigel, Bulldog Bob Brown. Yep. Yeah. Those were the days, man.
Bob Brown, the fixture of Kansas City. Right? He was always there, right? I mean, I don't know what it was. I don't know what it was, but Bob Brown in Kansas City. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'd go up to that office, man. I go up to that office sometimes and hang out just for a little while, you know.
Yeah.
And it'd be Bob Brown and Bob Geigel. I mean, it's like permanent fixtures in the office, you know.
Yeah. It's as funny as I don't know. A lot of people laugh about Bob Brown in Kansas City, but I don't know what it was about that town or that area where he was. He worked, I guess. I mean, it was their guy.
He wasn't no great wrestler or anything, you know.
No.
But he was, I don't know, he was like, you know, synonymous with Kansas City. Bob Brown, Kansas City. Bulldog Bob Brown, you know.
He was their guy. Like, I mean, I don't know.
That's your man.
And at some point, you wound up in Memphis. And, man, Memphis is a crazy territory. And there's some vignettes out there, right, where they did some vignettes of you, you know, those, you know, panning up on you and talking about all these accomplishments. You, I think it was like you said, you were a Turkish champion and all kinds of stuff. typical wrestling stuff, especially in Memphis.
Oh, I probably missed half the stuff they said. You know, I come across stuff every now and then, but yeah, it was a great territory, you know, and I love going there. I would just with a working with Lawler and all those guys. And I met a lot of guys while I was there, you know, that later on in the business, like Rick Rude and people like that, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, I found out though, when I went to Memphis, I found out that I couldn't talk, you know, on television. I was just worthless. You know, I couldn't, and it's like I draw a blank every time I go to say something. We found that out early on when I first got there. You know, when I first got to Nashville, actually, they picked me up at the airport. They took me straight to Jerry Jarrett's mansion there in Hendersonville. And Lawler was there. Jerry Jarrett was there. And they had me go in there and they had a camera set up, wanted me to do an interview. And I did, and it sucked, man. they looked at each other like, oh, this is going to be a problem.
You know? Yeah, and I mean, on top of that, you're trying to do some form of an accent on top of that. So you're probably worried about that.
I hadn't really done any talking on TV especially with a Russian accent, you know. So I'm trying to talk like I had a Russian accent, you know. Like, oh my God. That's why after that point, I always noticed that I always had a manager. If somebody could do my talking, you know. I just sat there grunt and groan, you know.
Hey, yeah, but that, you know what, that's what they're there for, right? I mean,
that's it, man.
It works. I mean, and then obviously let's talk about then your next run in Mid-South. That's probably where you're most remembered, you know, because there's a lot of footage out there. And you talked about a manager, obviously, there. You're managed by Eddie Gilbert. And it's odd because you look at that and you think, you know, Eddie Gilbert managing a heel Russian, and it just seemed peculiar, but it worked. Because Eddie had, you know, kind of his army thing going on, and he was trying to get Bill Watts, and here you were, this big guy. And and you know, you look different, right? You had the furry stuff, the furry boots. So you looked a little different. But you know, so most people remember you from that run, especially when you and Gilbert attacked Bill Watts and you covered him with the USSR flag. So tell me, let's talk about that for a bit. Was that a Bill Watts idea? I mean, obviously he had okay in.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that was definitely his idea. I mean, we were, this is the angle they came up with, you know, to start covering people with the Russian flag and start building my character and my heat. And it got to a fever pitch by the time we put that Russian flag on Watts, you know, the All-American guy. I mean, that just, that was hot, man. That was a hot, hot angle. And we had that Hot Stuff International thing going on with Eddie Gilbert. We had, you know, the Blade Runners, Rock and Sting, and Gustavo Mendoza, and myself. And, something they all put together there, and it worked really, really well. Yeah, we had a good run with that.
Yeah, and, I mean, it didn't hurt that on commentary every week. Bill Walks was all the pro USA, this and that. And, you know, that was, that was his whole thing. So here you were, right, and coming in and doing that to him. And let's talk, you talked about the Blade Runners. I want to ask you about them because they're very early in their careers here, right? They kind of got to start through Memphis, came over, to but they were very young, very green.
And, very green.
Obviously had a good look. Obviously, you know, went on to big careers. You know, obviously we're talking about Sting, what would become Sting and the Ultimate Warrior. Did what, I mean, you guys were in the stable, so you probably didn't actually have to work against them very much. But from your perspective, could you see, these guys are a little, rough. Because there's some of those matches there in Mid-South with them are pretty rough.
Rock and Sting, they were cool. Tell a little story. I was following them one day. We were going to Shreveport, do a show in Shreveport. And I had that little red American sports car that Eddie Gilbert used to like talk about, you know, Kravchenko and his and American women and his little red sports cars, you know, and I actually had a little red sports car. Yeah. And we're going to Shreveport on I-20 in my little car. It blew the engine, and you know, and the smoke was pouring out of my car. And before I could get up, pulled off to the side of the road, slammed on the brakes, and you know, Rock and Sting are in front of me, you know, and they happened to see in the mirror, see all the smoke pouring out of my car, you know.
Yeah.
And they pulled off and they backed down the shoulder, and we picked me up and left the car smoking and went on to the Shreveport and do the show.
So that was that.
I called the finance company and told them where they could find their car. You know,
you had to make your date. Right? I mean,
I had to. Oh yeah, by all
you had to book it.
Make the show, whatever. No matter what happened, be sure you're there.
You know? Especially with Bill Watts.
especially with Watts. Oh yeah.
Yeah. So, and let's talk about when you left Mid-South. Have you ever seen Missy Hyatt's book?
Missy Hyatt? No, I have not.
No. Well, in her book, she says that you left the UWF after asking Bill Watts for a raise, and he shot on you in the ring. And then she says that you rolled out of the ring, went straight out the back door, got in the car, and just took off, and never came back. And she said that, I believe she said that was told to her from Eddie himself. How much truth, is there any truth to that? How much truth to that?
Part of it's true. Okay. There was never asking for a raise. He shot on me in the ring because I was late to the show that night.
Okay.
And he hated that. He hated anybody being late. You know, we were working main event that night. I was with him. And I was in Jackson, Mississippi. Yeah, I remember that very well. We were going to work main event, and I had no idea what this guy was going to do. And I got to the show. I was running late. Gilbert said, hey, you know, Kravchenko, he says, watch this pissed, you know. And I'm like, okay. Well, anyway, he shot on me in the ring. And I never had that happen to me, you know.
Yeah.
But it infuriated me. Uh-huh. It infuriated me. I broke his sugar, which me and him talked about later. Watts and I have talked over the years many, many times. And I broke his sugar that night. I crawled out of the ring and tried to get my shovel from Gilbert because I was going to go back in the ring and I was going to hurt the guy. I really was. And Gilbert wouldn't give me my shovel. He's like, you know, I can't. And I'm screaming at him. The people are going crazy. They think it's part of the show, right? This ain't part of the show. I'm fixing to hurt somebody really, really bad.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't give me that shovel, right? And I looked at Watts and he crawled over to the corner and he was looking to the back. He was looking for help.
Yeah.
I went out the back door. I was so pissed. And it's bad when I lose my temper like that. This is very rare, but that was one of those times, man. I was going out to my car to get my baseball bat. And my wife was out there in the car. Her and the kids were waiting on me that night. And I went out to get that baseball bat, and she's the only one that stopped me because I was going to go back in with that bat. And I'm so glad that she was there to stop me that night, because some bad stuff probably would have happened. And that's actually how that went down.
Gotcha. So, okay. So, and then because it's a lot of people have always thought it's weird because you were in UWF and then it's just, you're gone, right? You're in this big thing. You're gone. So what'd you do after that, after leaving the UWF after that? Where did you go somewhere else? Cause I know at some point you started promoting some of your own shows. And,
Should I say, after that happened, that incident happened, and I cooled off the next day, you know, I called Watson. Of course, he fired me, you know. Mm-hmm. And I told him, and I said, hey, you know, you tried to hurt me, man. I didn't try to hurt you. I was trying to teach you some respect. And I said, I don't need anybody to teach me any respect for this business. I love this business, you know. I support my family. You tried to hurt me, take me away from taking care of my kids, my wife. And I said, I'll never forgive you for that, buddy. And I was so pissed, but he paid me off. You know, he paid me what he owed me. And after a few choice words on the phone. But I left there and I went back to Tampa, Florida. Uh-huh. And I decided just to get out of the business for a little while.
Okay.
And just kind of rethink things. So I went into the fishing business with my brother. And we did that for a little bit. And then I was ready to get back into business. So in 87, I went to South Africa. Uh-huh. You know. Yeah, I got booked over there, and I spent like about 4 months in Johannesburg, you know, doing that tour over there. We went over with the midgets, you know,
yeah.
And little Mr. T and Cowboy Lang and Pepe Gonzalez, Pepe Gomez. I can't remember the last name, and one other one I cannot remember his name. But yeah, we did the South Africa tour, and then when I came back to Kansas City, actually, and did a few shows. But territory was horrible.
Yeah.
You know, not drawing anybody at that time. And then I went to Puerto Rico. And that was about pretty much it, you know. After that, I went back to after I left Puerto Rico, I just got out of the business. I went back to school at Spartan Aeronautics, you know, and went on from there. I didn't actually got back into business a little bit back in 90. And then promoted a few shows in like 92 and again in 2002. Promoted a couple of shows, and that's the last I did of it, man.
Yeah.
That's so when
you went to Puerto Rico, that was for Cologne, right? You worked down with Cologne? Yeah.
Yeah.
Now that's a pretty rabid area there. Did you encounter any of those wild fan stories you hear about them throwing batteries and different things at you? And
I didn't have that problem, you know. I didn't see it. I know we had great crowds, rowdy crowds, but nothing to that extent, you know. I did my thing there and no problem, you know.
Yeah, so after you ran some shows here and there, I mean, you just obviously by that time, I mean, the wrestling business was changed, right? I mean, it was territories were pretty much, you know, for the most part done, you know.
Done.
Indie wrestling at that time was completely just, you know, small little things here and there, nothing consistent. Can't make any money. I mean, if you weren't working for McMahon or Turner, there was just nothing. And I'm assuming then that's just when you decide, that's kind of part of the decision to decide, well, there's no money left in this business.
Well, that's why I went back to school, you know, because I saw the business declining bad. I knew, you know, McMahon was going into all the territories, and he was, you know, basically shutting them down. They couldn't draw, and I didn't really want to go up there and work. I didn't want to work for that guy. It was, you know, I had an anger thing going on with the guy, what he was doing to the business, and I consequently, I thought to myself, you know, I have to find something else to do, because the business is going down the tubes is the way I know it, and the way I was brought up in it, you know. And so that's why I went back to school, you know. That pretty much ended it.
Did you have, I mean, a lot of guys have trouble when they step away, whether, you know, whether they're forced to, or when they think it's their time, because, you know, like you said, you know, if you love the business, it's such a huge part of your life. You're used to this lifestyle that, you know, whatever else that did it. When you had to kind of step away, I mean, you know, kind of forced your hand. Did you feel some of that bitterness?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, man. And it was a hard adjustment to make for me. Yeah. It was, I was, you know, used to that travel, used to the working those crowds, working to be on television, and just the whole lifestyle, you know, and having to readjust to normality again was a bittersweet pill for me, you know. But I didn't, you know, I didn't get out of it completely. I mean, in some respects, because back in, I think it was in 90, 94, I started doing, I was living in Colorado And I started doing commercials, you know, television commercials.
Yeah.
And one thing led to another, you know, and then when I moved from there, I went to Dover, Delaware. And from that, boy, it just took off. And I was in New York City every weekend doing auditions and for everything you could think of. And then ultimately I did some movies. I did two movies, Condition Red with James Russo. And then they put me in 12 Monkeys Bruce Willis. I did that with Bruce Willis. Yep. So that took off pretty well. And then after I got out of that, I didn't do anything else until 2013 when I got when they took me in for a part in Big Rig Bounty Hunters, a reality TV show on History Channel.
Yeah, so. That's what I was going to talk about next. So tell me, okay, I'm not familiar with the show. What is the premise of Big Rig Bounty Hunter? Because I mean, to me, it sounds like a combination of trucking and bounty hunting. I'm curious what the show is about.
There really wasn't no bounty involved, so to speak. You know, I don't really know where they came up with the bounty hunters thing.
Okay.
You know, a lot of people think that we went out there, but the premise of the show was to go find abandoned and stolen trucks for trucking companies.
Okay.
Find them and either finish delivering the load where it might be sitting or bring the truck back in both. And that's what that was all about. You know, finding the truck, finding the equipment, getting it back to the owners.
Okay. Yeah. So instead of finding someone who jumped bail or something like that, you're finding a truck or a load that's abandoned.
Exactly.
Same concept sort of, but it's not a person, it's a truck. And right. So at this time, were you driving a truck? Is that what you were doing? Some of that too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And
well, I was a trucker too, you know. I was a trucker driver long before I started wrestling.
Yeah.
You know, so I would go back to it off and on, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how did you come to be on this show in history? You said you're doing commercials, you did a couple movies, right? You're an actor that's out there doing auditions.
Yep.
Did you apply and audition for it? Did they contact you because you had the trucking thing and you're a big, I mean, obviously, you know, they probably looked at you and said, oh, what a big dude. You know, you got to look.
Yeah. All right. Well, I saw, you know, my friend, my friend that was a partner with me in the television show, Marshall Clements, he saw an ad in Craigslist of all places, looking for talent for a upcoming, you know, show on History Channel. And I said, it gotta be bogus. They don't normally advertise like that for talent. You know, it just, that's gotta be a bunch of crap. Right. And he's like, well, I don't know, you know, anyway, I followed up on it and I was like surprised. It was like a production company in California. And I'm like, wow, this is for real. And so it was just a thing of talking back and forth and then sending them some pictures.
Yeah.
Okay. They liked, and then they sent a film crew out to Kansas City to meet with myself and Marshall to do like a pilot, so to speak.
Yeah.
But they just wanted to see what it looked like on film, you know? So they followed us to a parking lot, like we were trying to find something. And they liked it. They liked how we looked, how we acted. And that's it. They hired us.
Yeah.
They cast us in the show, and that was it, man. Just like that.
Because your background would have been, it was perfect for it, right? I mean, you had the wrestling, so you knew how to kind of work the camera, work the scene a little bit, right? You were driving trucks. You're a big guy, you know? So, hey, I mean, yeah, you had everything they were looking for. And, I mean, I would venture to guess to a lot of people nowadays, you're probably more known for that show than from what your wrestling career prior.
Well, you know what?
Uh-oh, did I lose you? I think you froze up, sir.
I get hit on about wrestling more than I do Big Rig Bounty Hunters.
Do you?
Oh yeah, I do. Yeah. I do. People seem to want to talk about wrestling, and they seem to remember me from wrestling. And So I don't really get mentioned too much about Big Rig Bounty Hunters or the movies I did or anything of that nature, you know.
Yeah.
Of course, if you didn't really know, I mean, I didn't have, if you didn't know it was me or see the scene in 12, like 12 Monkeys, for example, you wouldn't know who it was. Right. But, you know, I had a fight scene with Bruce Willis in the middle of the movie and he killed me. And it was like, you know, that was just, it was a short scene, but it was an important scene.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then the other movie was I was a prisoner and, you know, a convict and an inmate in a prison. So, but yeah, it's been an exciting career, man. I've had a lot of interesting things happen
over
the years, and lots of places I've been and people I've met, and it's like it never ends, you know. I lived in Russia.
Well, yeah,
in Canada.
Yeah, I'll go, and now you're living in the Philippines, right?
And now I'm right here in the Philippines, you know.
Yeah. So tell us about that. When did you move there, and what's that like? Because most of us have never experienced what it's like to be, you know, an American in another country. And
yeah, well, it happened because I met my fiance. We met online, and we developed a long distance relationship starting back in 2017. And, so, you know, I was trucking and we developed this beautiful relationship online, and I had planned to come here at some point. And then I had some issues with my passport, and it took me a while to solve the issue with the passport. When I got the issue of the passport solved, I was going to come here in 2020, and then COVID hit.
Right.
Yeah. And then they had restrictions on everything. So that shut me down for another 2.5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I came here. Finally, everything worked out. And I came here in August of last year. Yeah. I was supposed to stay here for just 2 weeks and go back to work. And then probably come back again in January. But buddy, once I got here, man, I waited like 6 years to be with this woman. And when I got here and spent a couple of weeks with her, I said, you know what? I ain't going back. I said, there's no way I could go get on that airplane and leave. I'm staying.
Yeah.
And that's it. I gave up everything back in the States, and I've been here ever since. I'm, you know, very, very happy here. I love it here.
Yeah.
Philippines is it's not a big culture shock. I mean, it is somewhat. They have things here that we have in America. Same thing, 7-Elevens and Kentucky Fried Chicken and McDonald's. They got all that stuff.
Yeah.
You know? But there are some differences, you know, traffic and things of that nature. But
is there a wrestling scene in the Philippines?
None.
Okay.
None.
I've never heard of none
that I've ever heard of, none that I've ever seen. Which is, you know, kind of interesting. I thought of possibilities there.
Yeah.
You know,
I've never been familiar with anything there. Are you writing a book also?
I am. Yeah, I'm writing a mystery thriller book. I've been writing it for a while now, but I finally got really serious about getting it finished over the last few months. And my wife bought me my fiance, I call her my wife, you know, she's my wife, but she bought me a desktop. I was trying to do it on a laptop and it was slow. She bought me this desktop and I've really been able to take off with it, you know. So I'm about 3/4 of the way done with it. And then we'll get it published, you know. That's my first novel.
There you go. See, you always got a creative outlet, don't you? Have to have something to express that creativity.
Yeah. And
Do you watch modern wrestling at all?
I don't.
No?
I don't. I couldn't tell you what the roster is and WWE or AEW to save my life. I have no idea who they are.
Well, yeah, it's a different looking business.
It is.
So,
right?
Yeah.
And I've caught up with over the years is like, it's like, wow, it's just not what, you know, it's not what I grew up with, man. I grew up with wrestling in the 60s in Tampa, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. with it's just a whole different ball of wax, you know?
Yep. Absolutely. And,
it's just not the same. It just never went over. It just never felt good to me. I didn't like it, you know. not like the way it was.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't. I don't think it has the same emotional context. You know, it's more high spot. That's not. I don't watch much of it either. I catch bits and pieces, but I don't know.
Well, you know, like I said, high spot after high spot, guys do, you know, they do finishing moves. You know, what would have been a finishing move in the business back in the day, and they just stand back up, you know, and just do it over and over and over again. It's like meaningless to me. Anyway, so
I agree. And I won't keep you much longer. We'll do a part two sometime and dive a little deeper into a few things. And, but I do want you're very active on social media. You're obviously you're out there. You're documenting your time in the Philippines and your adventures there and what it's like to transition there. What's the best way for people to follow you and see what you're up to with your new life there?
I'm on Facebook is the best way, really. That's okay. Where I do most all of my postings on Facebook. So, you know, you can follow me. I got followers are increasing little by little. I think I have about 12,000 followers right now.
Okay.
And, so I want to grow that. But, yeah, just Facebook, look up Korchenko, you know.
Korchenko.
That's it.
Yeah. You're on there a lot, right? You live stream a lot of things and show a lot of things and you post a lot. Some wrestling memories on there. Every now and then, your life in the Philippines. I've seen you give some updates on your writing. The occasional Big Rick Bounty Hunter memory here. I mean, so pretty much everything that's been a part of your life. Yeah. You're sharing it on there, and of course, Cita, it's been good talking to you. Like I said, I especially remember you from your UWF days and that Bill Watts run, and. So it was fun talking to you about that, and like I said, there's a lot of information out there about some of your other stuff. Besides that, it just seems like that's what everybody wants to talk about. And you've been pretty much in every territory there is almost back in the day. So
I did most all NWA offices I worked for. I don't have to, except for Portland. Never went to Portland, but most everybody down south, the Midwest.
Yeah. Well, all right. So so we'll let you go and. Take care of your electric problem there, or your electric thing going, and adjust that. And
hopefully it comes back on.
Yeah.
Hopefully it comes back on. Soon. Kind of has a tendency to get a bit warm here.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah. So, and like I said, we'll touch base and do a follow-up down the road. Maybe when you get closer to time to publishing that book, and then we can plug that a little bit and talk with you a little
awesome. More. Awesome. So it's great. All right.
What time is it over there? It's morning, right?
Yeah. It's almost 8:30.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're like 12. 12 hours difference for me, I guess, right? Because it's almost 8:30 p.m. Right. here. Yep.
Yep. 8:30 a.m. 8:23 a.m.
Yep. So I'll be heading to bed soon, and you're getting your day started. So.
That's right.
All right. Well, have a good day and a good weekend coming up, and keep in touch, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you, Mark. All right. Appreciate it, man.
Hey, everybody. Gene Jackson here, inviting you to check out the Retro Wrestling Review. Each week, I'm joined by some great co-hosts who help me review classic episodes of USWA Championship Wrestling, and right now, we are doing week-by-week reviews of 1993. But we don't just do reviews. Sometimes we get a chance to interview some of the people who were there and lived it, plus do watch-alongs. It's a lot of fun, so check out new episodes that drop every Wednesday at WrestleCopia.com, and to find links to everything associated to the podcast, you can go to uswapodcast.com.
All right, and thank you for sticking around here on Wrestling Nostalgia. Thank you to Korchenko for coming on and doing that interview. Maybe we'll do a follow-up later. It was very interesting to hear his side of the incident causing him to leave the UWF, right? Because there's been a lot of mystery, a lot of conjecture, a lot of talk, mystery, whatever you want to call it. I know I said mystery twice, but anyway. Surrounding that incident. So it's good to hear his side of the story. Guys, go follow me on X. I'm at the Dave Dynasty. While you're out there, and if you got a little spare time, go check out all of the WrestleCopia network of podcasts. They're all great shows, great people, great hosts on these shows, just very, very entertaining. A slew of different topics that they discuss, pretty much any territory, for the most part, that you would like, all the big ones. Just so entertaining, so much fun. Go check them out, WrestleCopia.com, or look them up by name on your favorite podcast platform. Also, be sure to check out my friends at the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library. Go to classicwrestling.net or download their app on all of your devices. Now, next episode, speaking of fun guests, fun interviews, I will have Kerry Silken on the show. Man, Kerry and I just clicked right off the bat. We had so much in common, so much to talk about. I could literally sit and talk with Kerry for hours. And most of that could even just not even be about wrestling. There was so much there for us to chat about. And we had a really, really great conversation. We talk about Ring of Honor, of course. We talk about New York. We talk about music. We talk about so much more. And again, man, we'll have to have Kerry back on because I felt like we just scraped the tip of the iceberg on the conversation that he and I could have. So check that out next episode. Guys, thank you. Thank you to all the listeners, all your supporters, all your follows, your interactions, your feedback, the praise you give when you get out there and you tweet or you post how much you enjoy the show and how much you like what I'm doing. It makes my day when you do that, right? Because I love doing this, right? I love talking to the people that I have on the show and interacting with them. And it is very much a passion of mine. But you know, there's something to be said when you get some encouragement and some feedback that what you're doing is really, really that people are really enjoying it. So thank you for all of that. And hopefully you will keep that up. Hopefully you will keep on enjoying the show. We have lots of great interviews coming up in the future. But until then, until next week, wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.
Fans, we brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Menninger thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.